If you're following along in your scriptures, today we will be in John 1, the first chapter of John's Gospel. Last week we got to read from Matthew's introduction to the story of Jesus. We read he chooses to begin his with a genealogy, speaking about how it is that Jesus came to be from the human perspective, what the family is that he was born into. That's sort of Matthew's focus. John begins his gospel a little bit differently. John typically thinks about things from the more eternal, ethereal perspective, and so he's speaking of the Christ who comes to dwell among us. And I would guess that these words are familiar to you, but I would invite you to try to hear them anew this morning. We'll read the first five verses and then jump down a little bit for 10 through 13. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. Verse 10, he was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or the will of the flesh or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory as of the glory of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. I will stop there. This is the Word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. So this morning, as we continue this honest Advent journey, we're talking a little bit about identity and looking sort of internally. We said last week, and we'll unpack this a little bit more, but Advent is a time in which we're invited into introspection to suspend our certainties and to see if we might allow ourselves to be vulnerable enough that God could meet us anew and differently this year in the midst of the Christmas story. I'm going to try to fix this. We'll see if it works. That was a great sound. Okay. This week, as we've hosted our Living Nativity, I've been thinking about other events that Common Grace has hosted throughout the years, and as we've tried to connect with our community and our neighbors in new and different ways. And one of my very favorite memories and one of my very favorite stories comes from the very first community-facing event that we hosted. This was before Common Grace existed as a worshiping community. It was a group of people who prayed together and gathered together and believed that God was doing something new. I was in the midst of getting to know people in the neighborhoods in South Olathe and business leaders around the Ball Conference Center, and we were approaching our launch day, and this was a few weeks beforehand. We hosted our first fall festival, and this was an opportunity where we partnered with local businesses, where we encouraged students to come in their costumes. There was a trunk or treat. There was snacks. There was activities. There was all kinds of stuff happening, and so again, we were just a few weeks to launch. This was a pretty big deal, and it was very exciting, and there was a lot of people there. But one of the things that happened that I love, I can't say it without laughing, there was a boy who was dressed in his Spider-Man outfit, like head to toe. He was all done up. He had his feet were covered in whatever the costume was, and he had the muscles, you know, built into the costume. He had his mask on, and he came up. I'm not sure what the context was, but he sort of came up to Hope, and she looked at him and said, "Look, it's Spider-Man." And the boy tensed up, and he ripped off his mask, and he said, "I'm Harry Potter." And he began to sob. Hope was a little bit taken aback and not entirely sure what to say. She did recover pretty well and said, "Oh yes, of course, Harry, I'm so sorry." And here's the deal. It wasn't like he was Clark Kent with a Superman outfit on. I thought maybe when he pulled off the mask, he would have a lightning bolt. Nothing. Nope. He just was Harry Potter. And this is the deal. I think that some of us, in maybe less comical and less clear ways, tend to do the same sort of thing when we think of our identity. We imagine ourselves as one thing, and we get very upset if other people don't see us that way. Or perhaps we know ourselves to be one thing, and we want to project something else. We work very hard that others might think something else. When there there is dissonance between who we are and who we want to be perceived as, or who it is that we want to be in the world, we often struggle greatly with that dissonance. That's what we're talking about this morning. I think we do that again in all kinds of ways. Parker Palmer is one of my favorite authors, and he says, speaking of the soul, he says this, the soul is like a wild animal, tough, resilient, savvy, self-sufficient, and yet exceedingly shy. The innermost part of our being is all of these things, and yet it is also shy. It's also apprehensive and wants to remain safe and protected. Sometimes I think of our inner selves as more of a wounded animal, that we are sometimes all the more aggressive and push people away or attack people all the more tenacious when we've been most wounded, when we're most struggling, or when the wounds of the past for some reason come to the fore of our minds. We are people who have complicated identities. We know that we have great skills and capacities. We also have great struggles. We are people who know some things for sure about ourselves and many things we're not nearly as confident about. We're people who try to project images so that we can protect who we are. Maybe we know this time of year especially that sometimes we identify ourselves as being people who are tired and worn down. That becomes so much a part of who we are that we conflate it with our identity. We also know what it is to be people who have questions and doubts. And maybe that comes to the fore in this season. Now, that's not the sum total of our identity. We are people who have capacity and strength. We are people who build relationships and love and are loved. We are capable and powerful. We're creative. All of these things are true that make up this complex being that we call ourselves. And some things we know about ourselves and some things we're unsure about and some lies we've told ourselves for so long that we've begun to forget that they were lies in the first place. And this morning we're talking about all of that because I think in this holiday season, all of these extremes, the goods and the bads, the truths and the lies of who we are, they can get magnified. We have opportunities to celebrate the best of who we are and also sometimes to be reminded of the places that we struggle with the most. So this year at Common Grace, we're on a journey called Honest Advent, and it's inviting us to be a little bit more real, a little bit more honest, and a little bit more vulnerable in these few weeks. We said that a part of the invitation of Advent is to let go of our certainty and enter into this time of waiting and anticipating and wondering, and that we do that because there are times in our lives where we go into seasons where we feel like we're waiting and we're wondering what's next. We do that because as a people of faith, we declare that Christ has come and that Christ will come again in final victory, that the world is not as God intends it to be, and what does it mean to look ahead and to work towards that kingdom that God imagines for all of us? So that's what we enter into in this season as the nights get longer and the days get shorter and the world gets a little bit cooler. Vulnerability, we said, isn't our strong suit. It's not something that we naturally want to do. We're much more timid. We want to protect ourselves. We want to put on shells so that we don't get attacked or so that we don't get hurt. And yet we know that there's power in vulnerability. That's where relationships can form. That's where healing can happen. That's where creativity flourishes. And so we know that there's a power in vulnerability and we need vulnerability. And yet we also know that we struggle to go into that place. Honest Advent is an invitation to do that work, to go into that place that may be challenging for us. In two separate chapters of his book, Scott Erickson, whose title we're using for this and whose book we're using as a devotion, speaks about the passage that we opened with this morning that I read for our scripture reading. He speaks about the first section, particularly focusing on this line of John's gospel. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light to all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. We often talk about Jesus as the light of the world, and when we come to this Christmas season, we talk about light and breaking into the darkness. These are phrases that we use a lot. Erickson says that the Word, or the Christ, or Jesus, gave life to everything and everyone, and then that Word's life brought light to everyone, or the giver of life joins this life and brings light to all people. It's all a little bit confusing, but don't get lost in the metaphor. He says this, and I thought this was so helpful. Put simply, the function of light is to help us see more clearly. Jesus is light in that he helps us see our own lives more clearly. In other words, reflecting on Jesus's reality and who he is and the way that he lives and the way that he teaches and what it means for God to come and be vulnerable and dwell with us, it provides a mirror, a lens in which we can see ourselves and sort of be open and trust that we can be vulnerable and exposed and be real about who we are and what our identity is and who it is that God has intended us to be in the world. When we do that reflection, we can see ourselves more clearly. Then later in John's prologue, we read that the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory as of the Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. Erickson defines truth as the actual state of the matter, seeing things the way they are. He goes on to say that the truth is the end of the journey towards having clear perspective. Truth is found when we lay aside our preference and our vantages to see things for the way they really are. It's interesting that those who spent time with Jesus consistently described him as being full of truth, having clear perspective, seeing the real. Now, there is a connection between this idea of Jesus being full of truth and this idea of Jesus being the light who helps us see more clearly. His raw and honest assessment of reality helps us see ourselves. And through his life, Jesus would uncover hidden motives that exist within people. He would name deep divisions. He would speak sometimes to the wounds that people had within themselves without sort of all of the pretense, going directly to the heart of the matter and what it was that motivates people. He would talk about issues that exist between people in relationships and within communities. And he would often challenge those places. And he would do so in a way that made people feel vulnerable. And yet often, if they would respond in the appropriate way, would also bring them to a place of healing and possibility and newness. That's the work that Jesus did. That's the way that he was sort of a light to the world, that he provides a mirror for people that they might see, that we might see the truth of the matter and pause our pretensions and projections and instead view things as they really are. So as I was writing this message this week, I came to this point, and all of a sudden I actually started to feel a little bit exposed or a little bit anxious. Because when we talk about Jesus as the light of the world and making clear within ourselves and around us what is really going on, that's great. I could use a little bit of that in my life. In the midst of this season, I would love clarity about where it is that I'm going, what the next steps are. I would love clarity about directions and relationships and places that I should spend more energy and things that I can let go of. That's a good and a beautiful invitation. I love that. Clarity in all of those areas of my life feels really good. But then we talk about full of truth, and this idea that oftentimes that truth was challenging when Jesus presented it, that oftentimes it spoke into vulnerabilities and wounds that people had, not in a negative way, but in a way that sort of exposed motivations for what they really are. And that feels uncomfortable because now we're not just talking about making clear a path, we're talking about looking at things how they really are. And I know I have inner work to do, and that makes me feel a little bit exposed in this season, and that makes me feel a little bit nervous and a little bit anxious. And then I think back to what the last line that we read was. It says that the light came into the world full of grace and truth. That Jesus wasn't just full of truth that was dropping truth bombs and leaving the wreckage all around, but Jesus was also one who was filled with grace. He wasn't only illuminating all that is and laying things bare, he was also offering the unmerited gift of divine favor freely to those who interacted with him. And that continues today. So all of who I am and all of who I have been and all who I will be that I do not know yet, all of that is known by God. That's what we confess as a people of faith. But it's also all wrapped up in this unending love, this gift of grace that's offered to me, not because of my works or merit, not because I sought after it or prayed a specific prayer. Long before I could have asked for that, God's grace was already enveloping me. I often think about grace as an ocean that we're all swimming in. It is as wide as can be. And so all of this truth and all of this light is all in the context of an ocean of grace. One more time from Erickson: to see Jesus as full of grace means there wasn't any perfection checklist that we had to meet to deserve his presence. In fact, his arrival stands against the idea that if you do right, you get more access to the presence of God. His presence was freely given. He never withheld it. grace is presence, not withheld. I love that line, and it's just been with me through this last week. Grace is presence, not withheld. What does that mean for us as a people of faith? What does that mean for us who call ourselves common grace, who seek to make grace known in the world, not in big extravagant ways, but in common, everyday, simple ways? What does it simply mean to look at grace as presence, not withheld? Remember later in John's gospel, the second part of perhaps the most famous verse in all of the scriptures, John 3:16, God so loved the world. But do you remember how that ends? I think this is so important. It speaks about the purpose. God did not send the Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. So when we find ourselves in a place where we're feeling a little bit too exposed, like the light has come, like all of a sudden we're not sure about that truth, we remember that God also comes with grace. We remember that God comes into the world not to condemn the world, but in order to save us, to heal us, to set us right, to put us on the correct path. That's the work of Jesus that we're celebrating in this season. And so when we enter into this Advent reflection and this Advent introspection and this Advent honesty, we're doing so knowing that God is seeking to bring us healing and wholeness. That work begins in a vulnerable and helpless child. There we find light and an endless supply of grace and truth for the purpose of setting all things anew. The question is this season if we'll allow the incarnation, the inbreaking of Christ, to illuminate us and our world, to see things for what they really are, will we be still enough to receive it? I mentioned that quote from Parker Palmer earlier. This is the full quote. The soul is like a wild animal, tough, resilient, savvy, self-sufficient, and yet exceedingly shy. If you want to see a wild animal, the last thing we should do is to go crashing through the woods, shouting for the creature to come out. But if we're willing to walk quietly into the woods and sit silently for an hour or two at the base of a tree, the creatures we are waiting for may well emerge, and out of the corner of an eye, we may well catch a glimpse of the precious wilderness that we seek. This, I believe, could be an invitation or an encapsulation of what Advent is. As we seek to be honest about our own identity and the world and see things for the way they are, if we would go into the wilderness, if we would sit a little bit, sit in the discomfort and wait and anticipate, we might discover new things about ourselves and God and the world at large. So on the second Sunday of Advent, as we talk about identity and we've lit the peace candle, to sort of tie all of this together, I wonder what parts of yourself you feel like you really see for what they are. What are the pieces of you that you feel rock solid on about your identity, about who you are, about what you call yourself and the way that you live in the world? What are the things that feel incredibly solid? And what are the parts of your life that you still need to reckon with, that you still need to make peace with? What are the parts that you need to wrestle with? Where is it that the light of the world, the light of your life coming in might expose things, might enlighten things so that you could see a little bit more clearly? Where is it that we need truth, that we need to understand? Maybe you've sought after it and you just haven't felt like you've came to a resolution. Maybe you've been trying to ignore it for a long time. What are the pieces within you that need that reckoning in this season, need that truth? And might it be that you can go on that journey with confidence because you know it's all wrapped in peace? It is in vulnerability and openness, in the honest assessment of who we are, that we find the possibility for transformation in the making of all things new that we seek after and look forward to. When I think about the Christmas story, I think there is a succinct example of what this sort of might look like. I think about Mary. Here is this woman, really this girl, who is a normal everyday person who receives this information from a messenger of God that her entire world is about to be turned upside down. The angel tells her not to be afraid and that there is good news, but when she hears it, she fears. And the scripture says she wonders, she ponders what this is about and if this news is truly good. She wonders if the angel has come to the right address. She wonders if he realizes who he is talking to. She says, how can this be? And I think she wonders that because she knows herself. She knows her past and her present. She knows her strengths and her weaknesses. She knows her skills and her follies and her intellect and her struggles. Like you, she knows what it is to be tired and to be worn down, to have questions and doubts, also to have capacity and power and love and creativity. She knows all of it. She knows her story. She knows her reality. She knows her truth. And because of that, and because of who she is, I think it's because of all of those things that this news sounds perplexing and a little unsure. But alas, the divine has not made a mistake. The angel did not show up to the wrong address. He did not speak to the wrong person. He has not intended this message for somebody else and not for her. God has not intended this message for somebody else and not for you. Indeed, there is good news coming, and it is coming as the light of the world, full of grace and truth. Indeed, there is good news right in the midst of that knowing that we have and the uncertainty that we have, that God is showing up right there for you and I. Mary's response, I think, is instructive for us when she receives that news. She says, "Let it be for me as you have said." I want to read these words from our book from Scott Erickson that I think are helpful. "So it is with you as well. The divine proclamation will come through very unexpected ways. It very well may be through the ignored or marginalized aspects of your life, the embarrassing, unsuccessful parts, that if you take the time to listen, you'll begin to hear the angelic proclamation, 'Do not be afraid, I bring good news that will be cause for great joy.'" This year, where in your life does that good news need to show up? Where in your life does that honesty need to be made real? Where in your light do you need life? Do you need the light of the world to expose things for how they are? And can you do so trusting that in God we find truth and we also find grace? However and wherever and about whatever it is that the divine proclamation shows up in your life, may you say, as Mary did, "Let it be so for me as you have said." Amen. Let's take a few moments for reflection.